It's time for a solid hour of business insights and strategies for success on Mind Your Business. And here's your host, the president and founder of Bottom Line Marketing, Yitzhak Saflis.
Welcome to Mind Your Business on 77 WABC Radio in the greater New York, New Jersey area. I'm Greg Greenberg, sitting in for the one and only Yitzhak Saflis, who's off for the holidays. If you're not listening in your car or home on 77 WABC Radio, so-called terrestrial radio, you might be listening via the internet on mybradio.com. That's mybradio.com, or perhaps on the C-Suite Network, which broadcasts all over the world online and on Apple and on Amazon and Roku and all those other places where millennials loiter like it's some kind of a 7-Eleven parking lot. But anyway, because I am filling Yitzhak's very large shoes, I don't want to deviate too far from the script that he sets. He generally starts his show by thanking his listeners for their trust and support. So thank you, listeners out there, and thank you, everyone here at WABC, for making me look good. Thanks to the producers, Matt out there. Thanks a lot for cleaning up all the mistakes I'm going to make. And be ready with the bleep button, guys. We got a rock star here. I'm telling you that right now. So Yitzhak, he always has big name executives on his show giving unmatched business advice. He does it week in, week out. And check out the website. You'll be able to see who he has on his show. You can see all his guests there. And on that score, I will not disappoint my guest today, Bob Caporale. He is the aforementioned rock star. Let me tell you a little bit about Bob before he comes on. He's a Renaissance businessman. Right, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
All right, I'm going to give you the background. I'm going to give him your background right now. So Bob's expertise is in business strategy. In fact, he wrote the book on it. It's called Creative Strategy Generation. It's available on Amazon. There's a plug for you, buddy. He also contributed to a number of other books on the topic of product management. And when he's not offering strategy advice for a fee, he's doing it for free on his podcast, Dear Strategy, where he answers business strategy questions from listeners. That's awfully nice of you to give away your services for free. He also co-hosts a video series called Beyond the Beef, and it's not about a hamburger restaurant. It's about solving problems in the workplace. He also facilitates workshops and does training programs on strategy planning and business management through his company, Strategy Generation Company. And he books speaking gigs and talks through them. And he talks to audiences while they eat their lunches, while they eat that chicken, you know, that they give you at those gigs. And then finally, here's when I say he's a rock star, I'm not kidding. He's literally a corporate rock star. His music composition and performance skills can be heard throughout the internet on a lot of corporate and video soundtracks that he's written. He's also been actively involved in his Theater of Life music project for the past 25 years, which he's released several independent albums, two of which currently available on iTunes. Another plug. I should get a cut of this. And select online music retailers. And he's also composed a full-length musical that is still in the concept stage. Maybe we'll finish that at the end of the show. And the sketch recording can be found by visiting Broken Heart Musical page on SoundCloud. Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Caporale. Welcome, Bob. Oh,
Greg, I don't think I've ever sounded so good.
Well, I mean,
thank you.
You do sound good. You know, here's the thing is you're in music, you're giving speeches, you're talking strategies. You really are blowing the curve, and it's not fair, all right? So while the rest of us are watching TV when we go home from work, you're doing a lot of things. Why are you blowing the curve for everybody, dude?
I don't know. My wife asked me the same thing. Like, why don't you stop at some point and just, like, relax? But it's my way. I don't know. I just go home, and I never really like to just sit down and veg in something in front of the TV and, you know, do that kind of thing. I'm a guy who's just kind of always doing something. I have to do something creative, always build something. So I guess that's translated into that resume.
You're Bob the Builder,
I'm Bob
right?
The, yeah,
like my
go.
Kids used to watch Bob the Builder. You are Bob, the real incarnate Bob the Builder. So let's start with what you do every day. Tell me about Strategy Generation Company.
Yeah, so Strategy Generation Company. So it's a fairly new company, launched it pretty recently. And, you know, the premise behind that is I've always been in the corporate world, right? So I spent 20 years in the corporate world in various different executive positions for large corporations and things like that, and always very involved in developing strategies. Kind of became my thing somewhere along the way as I was kind of known for developing strategies, go into a group and come up with a plan and execute it.
You became the strategy guy in the office.
The strategy guy,
hey,
that's right.
Get Bob, he's the strategy
guy.
Yeah,
you know, and one at one point, that's exactly what, I, you know, the first time I heard that, like, oh, Bob, you know, he's the strategy guy. I was like, I am? Okay, that's pretty cool, yeah. So eventually, I decided that I wanted to go and try and take that skill and use it to teach. I always like to teach, always like to facilitate and things like that. So I went and I joined a training business, a small training business, and I ran that for, you know, 5-6 years, and decided, you know, it was time to start and do something on my own, which I did. And so I just recently launched Strategy Generation Company, which is really a training company focused specifically on training companies on strategy. So that's kind of where we go.
All right. So there's a lot of strategy consultants out there. You know, everybody's got an opinion.
Yeah. That's
even
sure.
If they're not professional strategists like you.
Yes.
So
yes.
What makes your program different? What's your core message?
Well, you know, there's two things. First of all, I think, you know, a lot of companies in the training space, they try and have their unique framework, right? And something that's different than the last framework that was put together and so forth. And I have that, of course. I have my, you know, my framework, but it's really not some breakthrough different thing that I created just for the sake of being different, right? I don't think that the core differentiator in strategy development is going to come through the framework. I happen to believe it comes through the facilitation. So what I really focus on through Strategy Generation Company is training companies on the creative process, right? Don't worry about coming up with a brand new different framework. Worry about how you apply all the great tools that are already out there and apply it in a different way. So the differentiator is really teaching people how to tap into their creativity. That's what we try and do.
And how do you do that? So basically, you know, someone hires you, you're going to be speaking to all the employees during their lunch hour. You know, they're eating. So, you know, you don't have to give, you know, your show. If you would.
You don't have to
give this speech.
I do,
because
you
know, I'd have to pay you however many thousands of dollars charge. All right. So why don't you tell me a little bit about, you know, what you're providing during that speech.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you just break down strategy, I mean, let's take it to the most basic level, right? Strategy has three basic parts. There's some type of analysis that gets done. There's some type of a planning that gets done. And then there's some type of execution that has to happen, right? And you can put as many words as you want behind all of those things, but those things really never change. So our framework is basically around that. So there's different parts of the analysis phase, looking at where you've been, where you are today. Then you look at the planning section, where you want to go, and then you execute it, right? So that's what we teach. But what I try and do is really correlate those steps into how do you tap into your own creative process. Don't try and use the academic version of strategy where you're, you know, kind of you're recreating something that somebody already did, right? Everybody wants to do what a big company already did. Well, don't do that. Just tap into your own intuition and create a strategy just like you were writing a song. And that's basically what I try and do.
Can you discuss the creative process in the corporate environment? So, for example, you know, you're talking about people creating into their own creative intuition.
Yep.
But you put five people in a room and the boss says, listen, I want the logo for the company in an hour. You're going to have five people with different logos. Everyone's going to have a different color. Everyone's going to say, I don't see it. And you're probably going to have a fight in that room.
Yeah.
So why don't you, how do you sort that out?
Well, you know, that's kind of – there's a difference between the creative process and a collaborative creative process, right?
There you go. Okay. and I just go right to the fight.
Yeah, you go right to the fight. But it's absolutely true. I mean, in a business, yeah, it's collaborative and
you
it has
play
to be
with
collaborative.
Others.
But I will tell you, there's kind of maybe a misconception that in the musical world or artistic world that it's any different. It's not. I mean, if you try and do everything yourself, you know, write, compose, produce, everything, it's probably not going to be as good as if you collaborate with everybody. And the minute that you bring a lot of different opinions into the room, yeah, you're going to have to deal through all of these different things. And in business, it's exactly the same way. So when you look at the creative process, the first thing you have to do is be open-minded, right? Be open to different ideas. And I would translate that in the corporate environment to saying, look, don't say that just because you read it in a textbook, that's the only way to do it, right? You have to be open-minded to different ideas, different ways of doing things. That's where the greatest strategies come from. So that's where I would start.
So how do you get people to open up? And
yeah.
Once again, you know, you're coming into as a consultant, you come into a company, you're teaching people, you're trying to get them to perform at their highest levels. But, you know, people don't like to change in the workplace. Right. You know, people say, you know, this is my fiefdom. I don't want to change. I want to come in at 9. I want to leave at 5. A change is bad. So how do you get them to open up? Because once they open up and once they volunteer information, one, they're putting themselves at risk. Maybe their boss doesn't like their, you know, those ideas. Two, maybe their ideas might clash with someone else's. And while that may work in the creative process, you know, look, Mick and Keith have been fighting for years. The Stones put out great albums.
Right.
Or at least they used to. But, you know, but in the workplace, you know, people, you know, that conflict can lead to worse things.
No doubt about it. But I mean, first of all, I think you have to break down the workplace structure. And in the workplace, there is always going to be people that are just not passionate about what they're doing. I'm sorry to say, right?
That's true. Yeah.
Some people that just want the 9 to 5, they want in and out. And so, you know, is there much that you can do about that? Well, I'd like to think you can by saying, look, you know, take your job and try and translate it into something that you love, right? Try and translate it into something that you're passionate about. I could tell you, every corporate job that I've had, I didn't love every one of them. I didn't love everything I did, right? I worked in some industries that I would have never, you know, dreamed of doing when I was a kid. But at the end of the day, what I always tried to do is bring something of myself into it. So we talked, you know, before about corporate soundtracks, right? I mean, I ran marketing groups and we needed music. And so what did I do? I wrote the music for the things that we needed because I tried to bring some of myself into it. And by doing that, that connected me to the workplace. And I try and instill that in people that are in the workplace that I teach, is try and connect whatever it is you do to something that you love, something you can relate to, and then make it your own, right?
And what about deviating from a strategy or pivoting? I mean, everyone knows, you know, what's Mike Tyson's famous line? Because everyone has a plan or a strategy until they get punched in the face.
Right.
when is it time to say, you know, something, this strategy is not working?
Yeah. So, well, lots of layers to that, right? So shut me up at any time. But here's basically what I'll say. First of
all, I'm not going to shut you up. You might punch me in the face.
No, don't worry. I didn't make the analogy. So. Right. but here's the thing. The first thing inside of business is when you translate the subject of strategy into business strategy, right? You know, business strategy is long term for the most part. And so I think what happens inside of businesses is if there is a strategic process at all, which in some businesses there isn't, but if there is, it tends to be maybe a once a year type of a process, right? So they tend to say, okay, we're gonna refresh our strategy on an annual basis. And that's the first mistake, I would say, because if you're only looking at your strategy once a year and only for the purpose of presenting it to your executives, then you're never going to pivot, right? You're only going to look at it when you need to, and you're missing the point of strategy. So the first thing I would say inside of businesses is that you have to look at your strategy and revisit it on a regular basis.
Here's a question. What is a regular basis?
Well, I mean, that varies from strategy to strategy and business to business. But
do you need
metrics
for that?
Yeah, well, I would say monthly at least, right?
Okay.
Now, you know, let's say your monthly staff meeting, okay? Mm-hmm. Whatever size business you have. Most people will have a monthly staff meeting. And a lot of those staff meetings are backwards looking. How did we perform? Well, just have a section of that meeting where you're also pulling out your plan and saying, okay, how does this translate into what we need to do, what we said we would do, and how do we need to pivot based on that strategy? So that's kind of one of the things that I would recommend, is just revisit it on a more regular basis. And I'd say that would make a big difference. But to do that, you also have to give your employees the permission to plan. So many times in business, we're reacting, right? Trying to get the next sale and everything else. And all that's important, but a lot of times employees don't feel like they can take 4 hours a week or 4 hours a month and go off site and whiteboard things and come up with fresh ideas and revisit their strategies. And that permission needs to happen inside of companies if you want to be able to pivot. Otherwise, yeah, you're going to be stuck year to year, not moving at all because you're not revisiting your strategy on a regular enough basis.
So how long do you give? Say your strategy is not working. You know,
yeah.
You know, you come up with a brilliant idea, but sales have been going down. How long do you give a failing strategy before you cut bait? You know, say you're a new NFL coach comes in, puts in a new offense, and the team just doesn't grasp it, and you're losing one game, you're losing another game, and the coach knows that this is the best way, you know, because it worked at his previous team, but the team has to learn that offense, and once they learn the offense, we're going to hockey stick and go upward.
Yeah.
So how long do you give a failing strategy before you just say, you know something, you know, look, coach, that offense just ain't going to work here.
Right. Well, you know, again, lots of layers to it. But here's the first thing. In business, because the strategies tend to be longer term, right, what you need to do is you have to plan for how long it's going to take for your strategy to ramp up. Now, you're not always going to get it right, but you absolutely have to do that. And you have to have some patience, right? As a business owner or a business leader, you have to have some patience. There's this thing, you know, I don't know if it's been coined or not, but I kind of call it the strategist dilemma, right? And in any business that I've been in, whenever I put together a strategy, it's usually going to take 2, 3, or more years for it to come to fruition. But most businesses don't have that kind of patience, right?
No.
So you'll get removed from your position long before you ever see the strategy through. Then once the strategy does start to hit, someone else is taking credit for it, right? And as a strategist, you almost just have to get ready for that and say, that's okay, right? So for me, when I look at, you know, when is it time to say we've got to move, the first thing is look at your plan. If your plan was that it's going to ramp up over 2 years, you have to socialize that in your organization and say, this is how long it's going to take. Hang in there and make sure that we're doing it. But then if it doesn't take, right, and in that time period, you're saying, look, this just isn't working. Yeah, then you have to revisit it. You know, there's no time frame I can give, like 1 year, 5 years, 3 years. It's all depending on what you originally planned. But as long as you have that plan and you can benchmark against it, then you should be able to give yourself some guidance.
What about if you ride a winning strategy too long? You know, when should you take stock and say, you know, we were doing pretty well for a long time, you know, selling these Beanie Babies. When do we need a new trick? Because, you know, the public might not like Beanie Babies or Cabbage Patch Kids. You know what I mean? When do you say, oh, or the Rubik's Cube, or so, something that's just all of a sudden it's a fad, it hits a wall, you're done. So when do you need to, you know, bring in something new?
Yeah, well, this comes down to something that's a little bit of a pet peeve of mine, right? You know, in any large company that I've gone into and done workshops for or whatever else, everybody wants to disrupt. Everybody wants to be the innovator, right? Even the largest of companies, they have great market share and they want to be the innovator.
Yeah, Steve Jobs, right? That, you know,
yeah,
well, wear a turtleneck. That's the cool thing.
That's
to do.
The cool thing. And you know, everybody wants to be like the next person that's coming up on Kickstarter, but they want to do it from the big company mentality. Here's the issue, and here's the problem with it, is that once your sales start to go down, you're on the other side of your life cycle curve, it's too late, right? That usually that's not the time to disrupt yourself. What you need to do is disrupt yourself, or at least start thinking about disrupting yourself when things are going really well. Well, very few companies really have the wherewithal to do that, because making those investments and looking to disrupt your product in the marketplace when it's doing great is almost like saying, well, you know, I want to get rid of something or you know, reduce my own sales when it's at its peak. And very few companies have, I would say, the wherewithal or whatever to do that, right? But the best of companies that are willing to do that, that's the time to do it, right? If you wait until you're already on the other side, then it's too late and someone else has already done it, and that's not going to work.
All right, so we've been speaking in generalities for a while. We've been talking about good strategy and bad strategy. And once again, for all you people listening out there, I've been speaking with Bob Caporale. He is, you know, he's from Strategy Generation Company. He also wrote the book on it, and I'm not kidding. It was called Creative Strategy Generation. So can you give me some examples from the marketplace of a strategy that either you were involved with, maybe a turnaround or something, or something new in your company?
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you that.
You don't have to name names, but you could if you want.
Yeah, no, I don't usually name names because, well, there's two reasons that I don't. One is that it's irrelevant, right? To me, I don't really like when people say, well, this person or this company did it this way, therefore I want to kind of repeat it that way. But if you kind of look at an example of a company like an Amazon, right? I mean, and I'll use one that everybody talks about. But what we were just talking about disrupting yourself, that's a pretty good example of a company that does that fairly regularly, right? And because of that, they have a lot of success and they continually grow, because just as one of their businesses are ramping up, they're not afraid to disrupt that business and come out with the next big thing that might even change the model that they have today. So I think that they're one of the best examples of a company that just continually innovates, continually disrupts themselves, and continually grows as a result of that.
And they have great leadership from Jeff Bezos. Can you talk about mixing management with strategy? Because when, you know, recently, you know, Elon Musk, he's run into a bit of a problem lately, because he He was saying things that he shouldn't have. Like, oh, we're going to take our company private. And and the whole market got into an uproar. And, you know, it seemed like he would. Then the next thing you heard, he said, I've been working too hard. I haven't been sleeping. You famously heard things about Steve Jobs wasn't the most pleasant guy to work with. Jeff Bezos, you always hear him laughing. So maybe he's a nice guy. But
I don't know.
Can you just talk about he's certainly ruthless. He will take your business out.
Yeah, it must be, right?
So can you talk about mixing management and strategy?
Yeah, well, when I think about management and strategy, I mean, you know, a lot of companies are going to take on the personality of their leader, right? That's just a normal thing. That's where the culture gets set. That's how it all works. So if there is a leader that's really innovative, really willing to disrupt themselves, like we talked about, really willing to push the envelope and move ahead and so forth, that's obviously going to translate through the entire organization. But here's what I would say as far as leaders, and we could talk about the huge leaders that you just named, or we could talk about, you know, a leader of a small business or a medium-sized business. Whatever strategy you have, you have to communicate it to your employees, right? And a lot of business leaders, I think, don't necessarily get the fact that that has to happen just like an advertisement, just like a commercial, just like marketing. People hear it once, it's not necessarily going to sit, right? It's not
going to
stay.
You got to get people on board. You got to get buy-in.
Yeah, you've got to continue to do that. And that message has to go over and over and over and over again. So I guess if you're one of those big companies that we just named, you know, you can't help but get that message across because it's always being talked about in the news, whatever else. But smaller businesses, they definitely have those challenges, right? And the leaders have to make sure that they socialize that strategy over and over and over again. And I can't tell you how many times I've gone into companies and, you know, you ask the people inside the company, what's the corporate strategy? Blank stares. They have no idea. Then you ask the leader, like, do you have a strategy? Oh, yeah, well, we talked about it in this meeting and that meeting. But they talked about it maybe once, right? Maybe twice. And it just doesn't stick. So you have to make it a part of the DNA and always advertise it, which is a challenge.
So here's a question. It recently came up. There was talk from the White House and the SEC about instead of quarterly reporting, bi-yearly, you know, twice a year, companies will have to report their earnings.
Yeah.
So what's your view? I mean, should it be quarterly or is that too short so companies can't plan, you know, they can't have a long-term plan? Because that's always been a problem. People have said, well, U.S. companies, they're always thinking short-term. When you look in Japan, they're thinking long-term. And the Chinese, they're looking for centuries, you know.
Yeah, right.
they want to beat us, you know, in the next century. Yeah. So just give me an idea of time limits and, you know, in long-term planning and short-term planning.
Yeah. I mean, look, whether it's required or not by the investors or whoever, I mean, companies are always going to look on a monthly basis what their performance is, right? So you always have the danger of being too short-term and in any type of business that you're running. And even a small business, right? You're always worried about cash flow. Where's the next, you know, dollar coming from? So those are things that you do have to pay attention to no matter what, whether you like it or not. The thing about long-term versus short-term, like I say, businesses are always going to have to look short-term to some extent. The key, though, is to make sure you have a long-term plan so that even if your short-term results are not where you want them to be, that you know that it's part of a bigger picture. It's part of a bigger plan. And as long as you communicate that and people understand it, then you can have the stamina to kind of ride it through. It's when you don't have that longer term plan or you haven't tied those shorter term goals to that longer term plan that you get kind of reactive. And then, you can really fall apart. So I would say the short term is going to happen. It's got to happen. Just make sure it's connected to something longer term as far as a goal.
Well, the thing about Amazon and Jeff Bezos is he doesn't care about Wall Street metrics. You know, he's just like, if I miss earnings, I miss earnings, you know, because over the long term, and they've proven it, you know, over the long term, Amazon is a category killer. Mm-hmm. So is there danger in metrics, in trying to beat those metrics, you know, every month, you know, every quarter, every half year, you know, should more companies, you know, be like Bezos?
Well, you know, that all depends on the company, I would say. Again, it's the strategy. So that's clearly Amazon's strategy. They've clearly communicated that. And as a result, they've attracted those types of investors who are willing to ride that ride, right? And I think that's the key. But if a company is more short-term focused and have said they're more short-term focused, then those are the types of investors that they're clearly going to attract. And then it might be harder to shift that strategy to a longer term focus. So again, it comes all down to communication. If your strategy is, you know, kind of sacrifice the short term for the longer term plan, communicate it, attract those types of investors, and I think that everything's a match, right?
All right. So let's talk about communicating your strategy to your employees, because we have a lot of executives who are listening to this show on WABC and on the C-Suite Network and all over the place. So talk about how the boss, if you're the boss out there, and including Bruce Springsteen, if Bruce Springsteen's listening, this is Bob's going to tell you, Bruce Springsteen, how to communicate to the E Street Band.
Oh, don't
okay?
do that.
So,
yeah,
how, so all you bosses out there, and Bruce down in Jersey, Bob, tell me right now, how should you communicate your strategy to your employees? Is it just emails? Is it going around shaking hands? Is it joining their meetings? Because they might freeze up if all of a sudden the boss is in there. So tell me.
Well, look, I mean, it all depends on the size of the company. If you're small enough that you can have the personal touch, you can talk to people, about your strategy, obviously that's going to be the best, right? Because it's going to implant itself better. It's going to make sure that, you know, everybody understands it. And you're kind of always talking about where you're going and where you want to go. But let's face it. I mean, if you're a large company, 10,000 plus employees, that's going to be harder to do at a CEO level or C-suite level, right? To go ahead and shake everybody's hand and constantly talk to them about the strategy. So then it's really about making sure that that message flows through your staff, right? Because every CEO has a staff who has staffs, And so if you can make sure that whatever the strategy is gets communicated to your staff, and it's required that they communicate it to theirs and down the road, then that will obviously implant itself better in the organization. And then, of course, you could use other forums like having quarterly meetings or, you know, video conference, whatever else you want to do. But you have to make sure that it's talked about, and you have to make sure that it's required, right? Only in that way is strategy going to become part of the company's DNA.
All right. So give me a great strategy story, and then I'm going to ask you for a poor strategy story. So give me a great strategy story and a company you may have worked with.
Sure. So a great strategy story. So, you know, I would say that one of the better strategy stories that I've seen has to do with when people actually look at the world around them, right? So I worked in a business that was a utility business. It was working in the power utility industry. And at the time, at least, the power utility business was being incentivized by investing in their distribution system, right? So smart grid, some people may have heard of that and so forth. So there was investments there. And it was also at the time when the housing market was really, really strong, right? So utilities were looking at the housing market and investing in, you know, new neighborhoods and things like that, and not necessarily investing in the smart grid because they didn't have all the resources and all that other stuff. So this particular company was riding that wave of the housing market. Their product was sold into that business, right? And so they had to, they were very successful with that. So what they looked at in the future was, well, we can ride this wave and think that this is going to last forever, right? Or we can say, you know what? Let's look at the trends around us. Number one, is the housing market going to stay where it is, right? The answer to that clearly was no at the time. Number two, when the housing market drops, what are utilities going to be spending their money on? And the fact is, they were going to be spending their money on the smart grid, on upgrading their distribution system. So the strategy essentially became move towards that product set, right? The product set that would be used in that type of an industry. And they did, and they had success. So at the end of the day, the message from that was, if you just looked at what the business was at the moment and you thought that that would last forever, you would have failed within a few years. But by looking at where things were going and actually taking a risk, because at the time, who knew if the housing market was really going to drop or not, but taking a risk on this is what we think is going to happen, let's go ahead and invest in those types of products going forward, that was a good long-term strategy that actually paid off.
Well, you bring up another point in terms of technology, because technology, and we've mentioned Amazon before, technology can kill your company. You know what I mean? If you were making, you know, phones, landline phones, you'd rather be in the cell phone business right now.
Right.
Technology. So how do you make sure that your strategy is not going to run into the buzzsaw of technology, of a Steve Jobs, of an Elon Musk, of a Jeff Bezos?
Well, first of all, bank on the fact that it is, right? I mean, you know, that's the first thing that I would say. If you're going about life thinking that technology isn't going to, you know, infiltrate your marketplace or your industry, and, you know, talking to all the B2B companies out there where maybe it's a little bit slower to adopt some of the technologies that are already adopted in the consumer space, But yeah, I mean, that's just a mistake, right? It's going to take over. The digital marketplace has happened already, and it's going to take over every industry. So you better get ahead of it, right? You better be doing it yourself rather than let somebody else do it for you. So that's the first thing I would say.
So do you assign probabilities to this? So for example, you're going to come in and you're going to tell a company, because you're a consultant, you come in and tell the company, you know, I think this might be a great strategy for you. That said, there is an X percent chance that either a competitor might move in or technology is going to replace you. So, you know, talk about how you assign probabilities in terms of that strategy succeeding.
So, yeah, I mean, I will tell
how
you.
How do you cover your ass?
Yeah, I know exactly. What yeah. I will tell you that I am not a huge fan of, you know, data. You can kill yourself with that. Now, I will tell you, the bigger companies obviously have to have more data because they have to, you know, socialize it to larger amounts of people. You have to make sure your investors are on board, whatever else. So it's there. And yes, you can come in and get your third party reports and say, this is where they predict the market is going to go. And there's an X percent chance of that happening. You know, you could do all that. You know, if the question is, do I do that? Do I teach that? If it's required, I do. But the truth of the matter is, I'm much more of kind of that intuitive person, right? I tend to take more leaps of faith, right? I mean, get all the information you can, really look at what it is that you think is going to happen. Look at the trends around you, read the news, you know, open your eyes, and then take a leap.
It's hard. No, it's hard, though, because you can make a lot of money in a company before technology replaces it. So Warren Buffett always talks about cigar butts. I think it's like the Graham and Dodd style investing. So, you know, you find a company and it's like at the end of a cigar. You can still get a few good puffs, right?
Yeah.
You know?
I guess so. Not a cigar smoker, right?
Yeah. But still, I don't know what you smoke, but, you know.
Not that either.
Exactly. All right.
Not that much of a rock star.
So, you know, but you can really drive yourself crazy. I mean, you have, you know, there's a long runway. I mean, you know, right now we're speaking to, you know, millions of people over terrestrial radio, and everyone says terrestrial radio is dead. It's not. We're speaking to millions of people on it right now. Yes, you can also listen to us on the C-Suite Network, you know, or mybradio.com. So how do you keep people from losing faith entirely? So, you know, we just can't win. So you just cut bait too early when there's still money to be made.
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. And again, I would say that you have to make sure that you look at everything around you, make your own analysis, and at some point take some leap of faith. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are many companies out there banking on the fact that terrestrial radio would be dead someday, right? And so they maybe got out too early, and it's not dead, clearly. I hope not anyway, because we're on it. But at the end of the day, you know, those are going to be personal decisions that every company is going to make for themselves. What I would say to that is, you know, just look at the world around you, look at where you think it's going. And, you know, if everyone is exiting a market, there is probably a reason for that, but to your point, there may be some strategy in saying, you know, I'm going to be the only one that hangs on for some period of time. Yeah, and that might be good for you. So that's going to be a personal decision.
So, for example, vinyl is making a comeback.
Yeah.
And I had all my records, and I got rid of all my records, and vinyl's making a big comeback now. You go to these record stores now, and they're selling the same albums I had in 1983 for selling for $17. I'm like, what the heck's going on? I should just get my albums. And you are a musician. So I know you consult in business as well, but you're also a musician. Talk a little about your musical career.
Yeah, well, career, I don't know if we'll call it that exactly, but yeah, so I've always been into music, right? I mean, so clearly, you know, the typical story, it infiltrated my entire high school career, right, was music, and then I did it in college and so forth, and I was going to be the rock star. So you painted me as a rock star, thank you. In fact, I'm probably not, right? At the end of the day, that's what I wanted to be, but that, you know, that dream quickly went out the window, and I said, oh, you know, be a business person. But at the end of the day, I always tried to keep music fresh. I always tried to keep it in what it is that I do, whether it's a hobby, whether I made some money off of it. So, yeah, I did soundtracks. I wrote that musical that I talked about. You know, I never got it produced, but I wrote it. I ended up, you know, creating 5 albums along the way and selling them myself and distributing them on iTunes and those types of things. So, you know, I've kept pretty active in the music world, even though I never really made a professional career out of it. But I was always able to make the links from music to business. And that's what I love about it.
Well, you talked about, and this is part of, you know, what you do at Strategy Generation Company is it's a you keep saying it's a creative process.
Yes.
Right. And that's, and you talk about collaboration, and then that's a lot about what music is. But it is interesting now how you said, is, you know, something, I couldn't get a record deal, so I did it myself. So there's a pivot. Why don't we expand on this little, you know, this allegory about the how the music business works and how, you know, things come back into trend, whether it be vinyl or a certain brand of music. So talk about the parallels between making it in music and making it in business.
Yeah. So, well, first of all, you know, when you look at, before we talk about the industry stuff and right, the strategy, the industry and things like that, the correlations that I always make between, in my world, music and business has to do with that creative process. So when I was having some success with putting together strategies and so forth, I quickly started to realize that, you know, even though I tried to more directly bring music into the business, like I said, by creating my own soundtracks and things like that for marketing campaigns that I had, but there was actually a more indirect way that I was bringing music into my business world, which was applying that same creative process that I used to write music into the process that I used to develop strategies. Because it really is the same thing, right? I mean, with music, when you're writing music, contrary to popular belief, you know, song ideas don't necessarily just jump into your head out of nowhere. Usually people that are songwriters or composers or things like that, they've spent many years actually studying their craft, studying their instrument. You know, you can call it research analysis, whatever you want to call it, if you translate it into the business world. But there's background that you have to have before these ideas come. The other thing that I think is interesting is these ideas that come to you as a musician usually come to you because of the craft that you've learned, because of the influences that you've listened to, because of all those things that you've observed. And it's exactly the same thing in the business world. You observe the world around you, like we talked about before, and that's where new ideas will come from. So those correlations, to me, really were important, right down to when you go and put together the ideas, you have to arrange them into some format that becomes a song, and then you have to produce it, you have to collaborate, you have to get it out there into the world. Same exact thing with business strategy. So those correlations were always important to me, and that's what I actually wrote about in the book that I wrote, was I made those correlations. So that was kind of the connection in the music world for me.
And you had to find a new market. It's weird because you couldn't, you know, look, it's very hard to get an album or a movie or something made.
Oh, yeah.
So you put it out by yourself, and it seems as though the music industry is changing. So, you know, success is no longer how many records you sell. It's, you know, I guess it's how many streams you have,
yeah,
or whether or not you can get your music in a commercial. I mean, you have to find new markets. Can you talk a little bit about, if you don't mind, the strategy of finding those new markets? Because even for a product, you know, we talked about products just ending because you just don't need them anymore. Technology replaces them. But, you know, people want music. But however, you're going down a path, and the market that you thought was, okay, we make an album, we sell the album, that ends.
Yep.
And something new happens. Well, let's get the music in a video game, maybe. You know, let's find another market. Let's put it on TV somehow as background music to a cable show. Explain the process, the creative process for finding a new market.
Yeah, well, so first of all, I mean, new markets sometimes crop up when you least expect them, right? And I think that's what happened to the music business, is that somewhere along the way, the traditional distribution method of, you know, getting music into people's hands changed. And obviously it didn't change by the people who were controlling the industry at the time. It changed outside of that. And maybe the industry was a bit slow to react. And of course, there's a lot of case studies written on that. But, you know, as far as finding these new markets, again, I think it's about observing, right? Keeping your eyes open and not denying the fact that something is happening out there. And I think that was the thing with the music industry, is that, you know, at some point they had to catch up, but maybe it was too late, right? Maybe it was too late for some of those companies at least.
So now it seems like bands are getting discovered on YouTube or other social activities, and you have a lot of social activities. Like,
yeah,
I said, yeah, at the top, you are a Renaissance man.
Yeah, right.
You are all over the place in a good way. So you do podcasts and videos and webinars. Talk about your overall strategy and how you use all these different methods to get your message out.
If you look at the music business, or any business for that matter, there's a manufacturing component, there's a distribution component, and there's a promotion component. And the industry formed because artists didn't have access to the resources they needed to do any of those things, right? So they needed help. They needed people with connections, with money, whatever else. And so that kind of grew. Well, along the way, that changed, at least the first two pieces, right, is that artists then had access to the ability to manufacture their own product, right? Build a great product with home studios and things like that. So they could do that. They could actually distribute it because now it goes all digital. And so they could distribute it through, you know, relatively cheaply, you know, various digital means and get your music on iTunes and Amazon and all the other places. So those two things changed. And maybe the industry was slow to catch up with that. But that definitely happened. But there's a third component, which is the promotion component, right? Which I think there might be a misconception by artists that, hey, I can build the product, I can distribute it, and then I'm going to be famous. I'm going to be the rock star, right? And the fact of the matter is, promotion is tough.
It's crowded out there.
Oh, man. And a lot especially of voices. Now, you know, if you were one of the first adopters of YouTube, you maybe got a little bit lucky, right? And so you were in a much less crowded field. But today, I can tell you, you know, you put out your video series, you put out your music, and look, everybody's distributing it. Everyone's putting it on these platforms. And so that promotion part of it, don't underestimate it. Now, whether you need a company to help you with that, you know, I guess that's a personal choice. But you definitely need time. You need resources. You need money. I mean, all of that is out there, right? So that comes down to an artist strategy is, you know, banking on the fact that you're going to go viral, not a good strategy. I mean, you have to promote it. You know, one of the reasons that I try and be in so many places is because it's darn hard to promote your stuff, right? And you have to have a lot of content
tiring.
Out there.
It's tiring.
It is.
You not only got to be an artist, you got to sell it now.
Yeah.
So now, one of the things you do in your many, many worlds is you have a Dear Strategy blog.
Yeah.
So what are some of the most asked questions? I mean, when you're not making music, when you're not giving speeches at companies, and, you know, when you're answering questions on your Dear Strategy blog, what's the website?
DearStrategy.net.
Dear Strategy.
I think .com works too, but right. Either one.
It's all good. So what's some of the most asked questions?
Well, let's start with what it is, right? So I have several podcasts and several different
show-off methods.
I'm sorry. Well, you already made me sound great. So, you know, why not, you know, pile on? But at the end of the day, what Dear Strategy is I started that podcast because, you know, I was getting a lot of questions on strategy. So I said, well, let me get this done in a more formal way. So kind of collect user submitted questions and answer them on the show. So it's 10 minutes a week. And at the time, I really kind of thought that, well, how many questions could there possibly be on strategy, right? So I thought maybe it'd be a limited run, whatever it was. We'll see what happens. And I always had the concept of shifting away from asking general questions and shifting towards, you know, actually helping people with their strategy. So bring me a strategic problem and we'll do that. But, you know, I'm about 60 episodes in and I still have a pile of questions to go. It's amazing to me how many people continue to ask questions and how many questions I have. And they're all different, right? So there's a lot of questions out there from business people about this idea of business strategy. And I would say some of the most popular ones that I get over and over again has to do with what we were talking about before, management's role, right? Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between a corporate strategy and a product strategy? And, you know, what if the company is too short-term thinking? And you know, how do you do a strategy from a product manager's level if the company is thinking too short-term? So there's a lot of questions around that, almost asked from maybe a frustrating standpoint, right? Because employees are frustrated because they don't feel like they can be strategic in whatever environment they're in. And so what I try and answer, and you can go to the blogs and check it out yourself, but what I try and answer in that is that there's always a shared accountability. Don't fall into the trap of, you know, it's all the management's fault, right? That they're not communicating, they're not thinking anything outside of short term. Chances are they're doing all of those things, but maybe they're not doing it as effectively as they could. So communicate with them, right? Learn what they're doing.
So what's the best way for an employee to approach management if they feel they're not grasping the company strategy, and they're just, you know, they're worried about their job, they're worried about their position. They say, you know, look, everyone else gets what's going on, but I don't. So what's the best way to approach your boss and bring that up?
Yeah, positively, right? I mean, I think you said it the best. You know, if you're not grasping the strategy, maybe put it on yourself a little bit, right? Hey, I don't understand the strategy. rather than saying we don't have one, right? And I think that that will put them on the defensive right away. But if you say, hey, look, you know, I don't understand it. Maybe it hasn't made here. Maybe I just want some clarification. Then you can talk to your boss about that, your boss's boss. Most leaders are very, very willing to talk about their strategy as long as you don't kind of back them into a corner and make them feel like they don't have one, right? So do it in a positive way with shared accountability.
But what if you just don't buy in and, you know, what if, you know, 100 people say yes and you're that one person who just says no and you feel like you have to buy in anyway, even though you know that this is going to lead the Titanic into the iceberg?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd say that if it's that drastic, it may be time to go find a different type of an environment, right? I mean, look, I'm very much of the a proponent of there's not a wrong strategy. There might be a strategy that's wrong for you. So if you're a long-term thinker and you're working in a short-term company, maybe you shouldn't be working in that short-term company. It doesn't mean that the short-term company is wrong. It just means it's wrong for you. So that might be one of the ways.
Okay. So you do Dear Strategy. And when you're not doing Dear Strategy, you also have a video series called Beyond the Beef. And as I mentioned before, it has nothing to do with a hamburger company or a steak distributor. Tell me about Beyond the Beef.
Yeah. So Beyond the Beef was a bit of a comedy series. So my buddy and I, James
Luxie. You
do
Luxie, comedy too. You make music and you do comedy.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, let's
you're like Weird Al Yankovic.
We'll let people decide
you
for
play
themselves.
The accordion.
Yeah. Let's call it a, you know, I think it's funny series. But so we decided at some point, you know, a colleague of mine, now, you know, we work in different places, but at the time we worked together. And, you know, we worked in a lot of big corporations and heard a lot of people complaining, right? Just griping about their jobs and about their bosses and this and that and the other thing. And we always came out of that saying, you know, there's probably some truth to whatever they're saying and some reason for that. But it was getting a little frustrating. It's like, look, does nobody think that they have their own personal accountability in this stuff as well? Like, stop complaining about things and let's start solving some problems. And so what we did is we just started collecting some of the most common things that we heard about, you know, things that were out there that were bothering people inside of businesses. And we addressed one each week, right? And we kind of did a little banter back and forth. And again, we did this shared accountability thing. We say, here's the problem. Let's make fun of it. Let's make light of it. And yeah, there's truth to it. But if you want to get past it and get beyond the beef, so to speak, right, then let's go ahead and figure out how we can fix it. And so we always end with some solution that you can go ahead and try and implement.
Okay. I'm going to ask you, since you are the Renaissance guy, and
yes,
we've spoken about music and technology and business, are there any, and you have written a book, you have your own book on strategy, but are there any other books about strategy that you would recommend that should be on people's reading lists?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot.
You want to pitch your book one more time? It's called Creative Strategy Generation.
Yeah. So
all
that's
right.
Mine.
That's yours.
There
what
you
about,
go.
Give me some other people's
Creative
books.
Creative Strategy. So, you know, there's some really good ones out there, I would say. I am, again, there's a million of them, right? A lot of people will reference Blue Ocean Strategy. That's one that's very well known. Playing to Win. I see that one in a lot of bigger corporations. So really good one, written by the ex-CEO of Procter & Gamble. So that's a really good book. I'm a fan of the classics as well. So I love, you know, the Michael Porter books that were written back in the 80s, Competitive Advantage, Competitive Strategy. You know, Henry Mintzberg, he's written some great ones. There's one called Strategy Safari, I believe, that I really, really love. It kind of breaks down all the different theories of strategy, or all of the different schools of strategy, I think. I mean, there's a lot of them. And if you go out there, you go on Amazon, you look up strategy, you're going to find a million of them. My caution, though, right, is don't get too caught up in it. I mean, if you try and turn strategy into an academic exercise, I think you're going to be disappointed. Use all of those things the same way you would using musical influences, right? Listen to all the different records and artists and everything else so that you can get some ideas, get some different, you know, influences, and then use that to come up with your own methodology. Don't translate all these books into saying, if I don't read the right book or have the right degree and everything else, that I'm not strategic. That's just a fallacy. It's not the right way to go.
What about in terms of movies or military strategy? I mean, are you a fan of, you say, well, you know, it was very interesting what Rommel did in the desert, or what, you know, or what Eisenhower did it, you know, at Normandy, or, you know, or Patton, you know, when people talk strategy, you know, they generally think, well, this is what this particular general did. Military strategy is a big thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, You know, so can you, do you look at military strategy at all?
I mean, a little bit. I'm not a military strategist, so I couldn't say that I have any real experience with it.
But it seems like there's a clear winner and a clear loser in military strategy. You know what I mean? This is what happened at Gettysburg. This is what happened, at the Battle of the Bulge. So you have a winner and a loser in terms of military strategy. But I guess that you said that's not your thing.
Well, it's not. I'm not a military strategy historian or anything like that. But I absolutely use the analogies because that's where strategy comes from. I mean, strategy in business was translated from military strategy, right? And so that's absolutely where it comes from. So the analogies that you have to look at is when you're looking at military strategy, you go on to the battlefield and so forth, how are you devising your strategy? Well, first of all, you have some type of a goal, right? Second of all, you have to look at what's going on around you. So you look at your own troops, you look at what it is that you are capable of, you look at your enemy, and then you look at the environment, right? And then you take all of those things and you try and predict what might happen, and you come up with the best plan that you have, and then you go and you execute it. Well, is that any different than business strategy? Absolutely not, right? So the enemy becomes the competitors, the environment becomes the industry environment and the customers that you're going after, your own capabilities becomes your company, and of course you have a goal and a plan. So there's definitely correlations. The place that I think that companies can apply more of what you see in military strategy or so forth is, in military strategy, I would imagine at least that you go out onto the battlefield, you predicted what might happen. But when it doesn't happen, you have to have a backup plan, right? You have to be able, as you said before, to pivot and sometimes very quickly. Otherwise, you're definitely going to lose the war. And I think in business strategy, you have to take on some of that, right? A lot of times we have our plan, this is in business now, we have our plan and we won't stray from it because it's written down somewhere. We already told our CEO, so we're afraid to have a backup plan. And you can't go in with that attitude because you're never going to get it right. You're never going to predict everything the right way. You don't know exactly what competitors are going to do.
So you shouldn't burn, like the famous military is, you don't burn the boats behind you?
You can, right? I mean, yeah. I mean, if you do, maybe that's a strategy. But I would say that, yeah, you absolutely have to make sure that you have some backup plans. You have some contingencies. And even if it's not at the high level initiatives, that your lower level tactical plan, you have some flexibility in that, right? And so that's where I would make the analogy back to military strategy without ever having done it.
So let's instead of using military, because it's a bit militaristic definition.
Yes.
How about, and are you a football fan? But what about in the NFL? Are there any, because look, you have certain coaches, you have your Lombardis, you have your Belichicks, and then you have, you have your Bill Parcells. Those guys are a bit hard asses.
Right.
And then you have, your Bill Walshes and your strategic guys and you're now the big rage in all sports is the data, crunching the data in the Theo Epstein type of management. So if you were to apply this thought process to sports, who do you admire, who do you dislike, and what works, what doesn't?
Well, again, you're in a topic that it's not my thing. How much of a Renaissance man could I be, right? I spent all my life doing music and strategy, so I didn't have time for football. Or
you're a Long Island guy, right?
I'm a Long Island guy.
So
yeah,
you're a Jets guy, so you don't even watch that crap. Yeah. I'm a Jets fan. It hurts, guys. It hurts.
Well, listen, I have to stay true and loyal to my roots, but yeah, I mean, obviously, if you look at football, and without naming it, I'd probably be highly unqualified, right, to say it's this person or that person is a great strategist. But if you look at the same types of analogies, they definitely apply. When you look at what a football team has to do from week to week, what do they spend time doing, right? They're reviewing video, they're reviewing film from previous games. They're looking at themselves, they're looking at their own strengths. They're comparing it to their enemies, their competitors, and they're trying to predict what might happen so they could put together a plan for going out onto the field the next week. And so it is absolutely the same thing as military strategies, business strategy. All the same components will be in there, right down to you have your higher level strategy, you have your playbook, right? And you have to have contingencies. You have to be able to pivot on the playbook without necessarily changing your overall high level goal or high level strategy. So I think it's pretty much the same stuff.
All right. So we've spoken about Peloponnesian Wars. We've about Mick and Keith. We've spoken about the New York Jets. So tell me a little bit more in these last few minutes we have about your plans, your strategy for growing your business.
Yeah, well, so, as I talked about before, promotion, that's the hardest part. It's it's something that we always underestimate. And at the heart of it, I'm a product guy, right? So I always think build the product. And if it's a great product, people are going to flock to it.
Wait, one second. What's the difference between a product and a corporate strategy? You brought that up before. Why don't you answer that question since it's one that you get a lot on Deer Strategy anyway.
Yeah, just a lower level, right? I mean, so basically the same process, but a corporate strategy is going to be a higher level, higher, broader initiatives because it has to encompass all of the different products and portfolios that a company has. Whereas at a product level, you're going to do the same basic thing, but now you can get more granular, right? You get more tactical on a specific product or a specific portfolio. So that's really the biggest difference. But being a product guy, you know, I always still, as many years as I've been doing this, I still fall into the trap of, yeah, build it and they will come, right? And it just doesn't work that way. So same thing with the business that I have now, a strategy generation company, trying to get people to know about it, right? And particularly with strategy, I mean, it's one of those areas that companies don't seem to wake up and think they need strategy training, right? I mean, they do that with a sales training or product management training, whatever
else.
They
need blame training, right?
Yeah, right.
Because a lot of strategy is plausible deniability, being able to say it wasn't my fault.
Not my fault. That's right. So, you know, and so I think a lot of people get the fact that, you know, their employees need to be more strategic, but maybe they don't translate it into strategy training because it's not a big thing out there. So that makes my job a lot harder because I know that it's needed. I know that it's very successful when companies do it. But if they're not waking up every day saying this is something that we need, then I have to, you know, really try hard to say maybe it is something you should consider. And so promoting the business is the biggest thing. So to my strategy.
Yes, plug yourself.
Yeah. So my strategy is basically to get out there as many places as I can. I mean, that's why you said in the beginning, I give away a lot of free advice. Look, the reason I do that is number one, I don't think I'm saying anything that hasn't been said before to some degree. What I really care about is the delivery, right? Hopefully my delivery is a little bit different. But I also want people to know that this is an important topic for your business. Strategy can make or break a company and you need it, right? You need strategy training. So I want to get that message out as much as I can. So whether it's doing podcasts or blogs, you know, we didn't even talk about Deer Strategy has a blog associated with every episode I do. So every Sunday night, I'm writing a blog. So, you know, people can go out there and check that out. But I really need to get that message out there. So, you know, things like this, right? And try and get people to know the importance of this. That's my basic strategy at this point. And then looking to see, you know, if people aren't really, you know, kind of hanging on to this thing and saying that we need strategy training, maybe there's another methodology to get that out there. So that's kind of my backup plan, right? Maybe I have to pivot at some point. We'll see. It's a little early right now, but for now I'm trying to get that message out there that look, you need strategy training. So take advantage of it.
All right. Well, I think you're doing a great job. I think you're rocking it. And once again, thank you to Bob Caporale from the Strategy Generation Company for talking about strategy. It's been a great segment. And thank you once again to all the folks at 77 WABC Radio for letting me sit in for Yitzhak Saflis. And thank you for listening. Thanks a lot, Bob.
You bet. It was a pleasure to be here.
Great time.
77 WABC Radio presents Mind Your Business, hosted by founder and president of Bottom Line Marketing Group, Yitzhak Saflis. Mind Your Business focuses on business and marketing strategies for success. Tune in every Sunday night for this intriguing weekly radio show that's chock full of business insights and marketing strategies that will help you get ahead of the game. Host Yitzhak Saflis has been producing pioneering and creative marketing work for over two decades. He leads a team of marketing experts who help their clients build their brands and grow their businesses. Now, he and his guests offer their business and marketing expertise to you every Sunday night on Mind Your Business.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.